Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host for the evening, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Good to be back with the boys after a week off running around the province of Ontario for work. Good to be back, not with the full crew. Send some love out to Miles. He's not here. His baby, Teddy, under the weather, not feeling well. So Miles is running around cleaning up puppy shit. I'll beep that out. Don't y'all worry about that. but I'm here with my man, QB1. What's going on, JR?
What's going on? I kind of feel like you need to put Welcome Back by Mace in the background. Just because, you know, you've been gone a little while, man. We missed you, and I just feel like that's a perfect song to welcome you back.
Well, we might just have to kick it off with that one today. What's going on, Sexy Prince? How you doing?
I'm good, man. It's it's a good day. Coming off of, you know, Vikings win, so, you know, the day was good. I only work today and tomorrow, so, you know, I got starting to shoot the short film that I'm a part of for the rest of the weekend. So, only 2 days I work, so I'm good. And ever since this whole, you know, duck, gray duck, goose controversy has, you know, kind of come up, sparked me as far as what did y'all like? What was your favorite, like, elementary or preschool or whatever game that the teacher would, like, have us play and stuff? Mine, personally, was probably Heads Up 7-Up because I was a ninja, and no one could ever guess that it was me because I would always be sneaking around and stuff. So, what about y'all?
7-Up was definitely going to be my answer. Like, that's, like, the best game ever, even though I used to cheat all the time, like, all you have to do is look at people's shoes under the table, and you can tell who it was. But
not the shoes.
that was like the best game ever.
So we just talking any game we played, like what, in like elementary school or something?
You could even extend it to, like, you know, games you play out in the playground, you know, like Foursquare or something like that.
Well, I mean, if we take it to the playground, Foursquare was definitely the right answer. Actually. And my wife and I went to the same elementary school for a little while, and she could attest to the fact that the Foursquare games out there, they got real, real serious. There were some injuries on occasion that happened out there. So if it was for me, once we take it outside, either Foursquare or just, you know, any sort of tag where you're running around the playground, jumping off stuff, was me back in the day. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, we go through that real quick when Miles ain't here. I was waiting for one more answer and realized that, the man's not here with us. So I guess let's jump to it. We got a lot of stuff to get through and maybe not a lot of time to get through it all here. So, Yanka, you brought it up. Duck, gray duck, goose. Like, Yanka, you are our... Cause you're here by yourself. Miles is not on with you. But you're going to have to represent for Minnesota on this one and help us understand... Why y'all just mess this child's game up and do it so wrong?
I mean, it's just Minnesota. We got to be different. We got to be unique here. So I didn't grow up with Duck, Duck, Goose. I grew up with Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. It wasn't until much, much later in my adolescence that, you know, had some friends or whatever from, you know, Wisconsin or whatever. They come in and they, you know, they're playing Duck, Duck, Goose. And some other people I see online are playing Duck, Duck, Goose. And I'm just like, nah, y'all, it's Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. We have Gray Ducks here, I think, somewhat. I'm not sure. I don't know where it comes from, but I just always learned Dr. Gray Duck, y'all.
Yeah, the internet said something about it being Norwegian or something like that. So I don't know. I'd never heard of it until last night when Drew tweeted out about Duck, Duck, Goose, and then immediately tweeted after that that a bunch of salty Minnesotans were going to be in his mentions. And I was still confused until he started retweeting a bunch of folks being like, Gray Duck, Gray Duck, Gray Duck, Gray Duck. And I really had absolutely no idea. Still don't really know what's wrong with y'all, since it would appear that you're the only state in all of the United States.
Yeah,
to
man.
Do this, so.
Yeah, man. Unique. That's how we like to do it here in Minnesota. So.
Yeah. So moving along, because, you know, we need to spend too much more time. I think everyone and their grandmother wrote an article or something about Duck, duck, gray goose, duck, duck, content, goose. Man. Today, you know, content. Click, 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 click.
My man said gray goose, y'all.
Hey, man. Hey, pour it up. Pour it up. But, you know, the next thing that happened is not really Vikings news, but it's kind of Vikings news a little bit because, you know, Purple Jesus, Sexy Prince's man, you know, man. He had a divorce with our Vikings this offseason. And then he had a divorce with, I think, some of his ego or needed to have a divorce with some of his ego when he went down there to play with New Orleans for not very much money. And then, you know, things just kind of have kept getting worse for the man. And now he got traded, going over to Arizona. So, Sexy Prince, given that I know that AP is your man, that's your dude, one of your favorite players of all time, if not your favorite player of all time.
Yeah, man.
What are your thoughts on all this? What do you feel? How do you think this is going to go for him for the rest of the year? And do you have him in any fantasy leagues?
No, I've stayed very far away from Adrian Peterson from fantasy league. Like, AP will always be, probably always be my favorite player of all time. Just the things that he did early in his career when he was in his prime. I mean, he just laid the wood so many times. He was just doing so many special things. Came back from injury in 2012. But that being said...
Phrasing, Sexy Prince.
Yeah, right. That being said, it's kind of like watching, you know, Randy Moss, you know, when he went to Oakland, or when he, you know, when he came back to Minnesota the second time, or the, you know, when he came back to Minnesota. You know, it's just, these are just going to be the years that I'm going to have to forget about and try to remember basically 2007 to 2012 AP. You know, it'd probably be a good move for Minnesota, or not for Minnesota, but Arizona, because they can sell more tickets. You know, their season isn't going the way that it should be. Carson Palmer does not look great. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like this is more of a, you know, this is definitely more of a ticket selling move, because I don't know how they feel, what they can do with Adrian Peterson. I know David Johnson might come back pretty soon, so that's also going to further limit AP's role when he comes back. So, and they can get, they can get you know, a few games here over the hump before David Johnson comes back. But I don't know. It's, they should have traded for AP back in during the 2015 draft, like they were supposed to. But I feel like now at this point, you know, he's had additional tread on the tires. So I don't know. He's not the same guy. So.
Arizona has officially become the home, retirement home of running backs. Got Chris Johnson, Edgerrin James, Emmitt Smith, Rashard Mendenhall. It's where running backs go to die. And that's what's happening to Adrian Peterson.
It's where they go to collect a few extra checks, though, way out. Line their pockets. Emmitt straight went down there and stole from them boys.
Absolutely. The move makes no sense at all to me, considering that Bruce Arians is a down-the-field passing attack kind of guy, and that's just not Adrian Peterson's strengths, as we all know. He's going to have to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield and be able to pass protect, and we've all seen that that's two of his biggest flaws throughout his career, and he says he's going to work on it, but he just hasn't been able to do it to this point in his career, and let's be honest, he's not going to change or magically learn how to do it at this point in his career, but they do need running back help. That's the one thing the Cardinals do need, and they're going to basically force Adrian Peterson to play, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, considering how old their roster is, and it got old really fast. Larry Fitzgerald is 34, I believe. Carson Palmer is 37, and I'm not sure exactly how old Adrian Peterson is, but I think he's 32 or 33 years old, which is very old for a running back. We know once they hit 30, they start to decline, so it'll be interesting to see how they fit Adrian Peterson into the equation.
I feel like the Cardinals, they remind me a little bit of the 2010 Vikings, where, I mean, they realize they're old, so they're just like, all right, let's do it. Let's go all in. But it just feels like if this doesn't work, which, it, I mean, it's probably not going to work. I mean, it didn't really work for them when they had David Johnson. So, I mean, I can't really see them bringing an old AP in, that being the thing that turns their season around. But, I mean, it seems like just, you know, at this point, Arizona's going to look a lot different come next year than they look right now. Like, Fitz potentially retiring, Palmer looking a little washed at times. Like, this is it. And I think Arizona's on their last ride with the old dudes, and then They're going to have to strip that thing all the way down to the studs and start over again down there in the desert.
Yeah, ever since they lost to the Panthers in the NFC Championship game, it's been downhill from there. And I think they're going to blow it up after this year.
Gots to. Well, let's move along to some happier things, happier times. Good news in the land of the Vikings. Played a very ugly game. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. Played an ugly game against the Bears. That first half was some painful football to watch on both sides. But you know, at the end of the day, ugly wins are wins. Vikings came out on top. So, JR, I'll start with you, man. What were your thoughts? I know that you did your breakdown today. What were your general takeaways from the game before we get into some of the, obviously, the bigger news that came out?
I thought defensively, I thought they played outstanding. And, I mean, they were an Andrew Sandejo tip pass away from pitching a shutout. I don't give that special team touchdown to them, even though the defense was on the field. And we all know the safety was on the offense, of course. So, I mean, they were a tip pass away from pitching the shutout. And I know, considering it was a rookie quarterback, I thought it was a really good win for the Vikings. Not quality, so to speak, but I thought it was just good for team morale, getting over the hump of winning at Soldier Field, because we all know that place has been a nightmare for us since the 2000s. It's just been a nightmare, complete nightmare for us every time we've played there. And it just seems like every time we play there, it's so hard to win. So even though it was a really ugly win, I thought it was a good win for them, despite how ugly that they won. A win is a win. But, you know, some things that I noticed defensively, I thought they tackled pretty well for the most part. And the biggest key to the game was slowing down Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. And I thought they did that for the most part, besides the one long touchdown run that Jordan Howard got called back. I thought they bottled them up for the most part. The biggest plays that they like to run is outside zone. And I thought they did a really good job of setting the edge and just containing those two guys. They did a really nice job of bottling Tariq Cohen up. We know they tried to get him out on the perimeter and putting him out at wide receiver and then flexing him out in different positions to get him involved. And I thought they shut him down for the most part. Offensively, we know what the tail of the first half was. Wasn't healthy. He didn't look healthy, and he shouldn't have been out there, honestly, just because he looked hopeless or helpless. He just couldn't protect himself. But once Case Keenum came in, I thought the offense found new life. They seemed confident in what he was doing, and he moved the ball up and down the field. So those were my biggest observations from the game. I thought defense played lights out, and offense showed some promise in the second half, even though it was an ugly win.
How about you, Prince? What did you take away from everything?
Yeah, I would have to agree with JR. I really loved watching the defense kind of, you know, show some looks that, you know, maybe Trubisky had not seen before, just being able to have the versatility. I think it maybe hasn't been stated enough, but I'd like the fact that I think Anthony Barr is back. I think he is back to being the guy that we saw the first 2 years of his career. And I mean, it's good for the Vikings because you're obviously starting to see how they're utilizing him. He's able to be more, I think, instinctual versus like kind of read and react, which is maybe isn't his forte. Eric Hendricks can kind of read and react, whereas Anthony Barr is kind of like the more the, you know, the instinctual, just, you know, God given talents, you know, to either get up the quarterback or, you know, make the play as you see it. Watching Anthony Barr and Everson Griffin, both those guys are doing such a good job not only containing the edges, you know, shrinking those pockets for quarterbacks and stuff. So all around, I think a really great defense. I know Trey Waynes can be up and down. He still remains like a really good tackler, weirdly enough. And imagine how much we would dislike Trey Waynes if not only was he getting beat as often as he is, but tackle. So spot for him. But overall, like JR alluded to, I thought if I had said it before the game, I don't think Bradford should play. I don't think he's ready. And it became very evident that they did. He shouldn't have been out there. And even if he was somewhat healthy enough to play, Payne's taking it clear that he couldn't. They should have pulled the plug long before
he did. All right. Well, I'm going to jump in because it sounds like you started talking about Sam Bradford there, but you're also breaking up just a little bit. So I need you to get next to that router so that when we come back on this Bradford topic, we can make sure we don't miss any of your takes. And yeah, that was the big story that came out after the game. I think during the game, it was apparent very, very quickly for all of us watching live that Sam was not healthy. I mean, when he tried to jog out before the game, he had a little bit of a hitch in his run there. He was favoring that leg, just kind of jogging out. And so the game started, and I mean, you could tell he wasn't confident. The body language didn't look the way he wanted to. And then most importantly, from just a pure football perspective, he couldn't step into his throws. He couldn't make the throws that he needed to. And so throws that were short, he was sailing them. Throws downfield, they were coming up short because he was basically throwing them with all arm and not really using technique to get the ball where it needed to go. And, I mean, the offense looked terrible. The defense played an amazing half of football, and the offense only scored in that first half because Everson Griffin basically gifted them points. I mean, and I think the next play after the turnover, I mean, Sam got sacked because he couldn't protect himself. And, I mean, it was just awful, and it was one of those things where – you know what I mean? I know that the JR, as a quarterback, you had some fairly strong words to and strong opinions about, you know, the team putting him out there and kind of how you felt about Zimmer putting him in that situation. So without me, I guess, trying to paraphrase your thoughts on it, I'm going to let you go ahead and I guess let us know how you felt about that whole situation after you went back and rewatched the game, about the team putting Sam out there and just kind of, yeah, what you think about the team putting him out there, kind of how he looked, from his like mental state and everything else. And yeah, we'll kind of move it along from there.
Well, the first thing I want to say is I'm really glad we didn't record last night and I got a night to sleep on it because I was really upset last night as I was tweeting some things last night. So I'm really glad I got to sleep on it because I probably would have said some things that I regretted. But now that I've sat back and thought on it, you know, it's not all on Mike Zimmer. I think it's a little bit of everyone that was involved, and everyone meaning Sam, Sugarman, and Zimmer, and the organization as a whole. And I don't really know whose decision it was for him to go out there, but obviously, you know, Sam thought he was in okay enough shape to go out there and play. And I'm sure Sam wanted to go out there and play and help his teammates out just because that's the type of competitor Sam Bradford seems to be. Everyone knows he's not a extrovert or extremely fiery guy. He's more of a quiet, silent, confident guy. He's not a guy that's going to show a lot of emotion. He's going to, you know, exemplify it through his play. But I thought him going out there showed a lot of guts and a lot of extreme toughness. And I think deep down inside, he knew he wasn't physically able to go out there and play to the best of his abilities, but he still wanted to show his teammates that he did have some guts and that he was capable of going out there and performing, even though he was, I mean, let's just say 50 to 60% at best is what it looked like. What I was so mad about was they left him out there so long. And I thought that was something that Mike Zimmer could control, especially after he started 1 for 5 for minus 5 yards, I believe it was. His very first throw was very high to Stephon Diggs. His other throws were extremely inaccurate. And this is what I alluded to back during the practice videos that various beat writers were posting throughout the week. So basically, to break it down for people that don't really understand the mechanics of quarterbacks, your lead foot or, you know, your non-strength foot. So if I'm right-handed, my lead foot obviously would be my left foot. That's like your guide foot, and that's what you use to drive the ball. And I compare it to a pitcher. When you see a pitcher drive down a mound with that opposite leg, that's what they're using to place the ball wherever they're trying to place it. It's the same thing with a quarterback. You're using that lead leg or that lead foot to drive the ball in place where you want the ball to go. And what you saw with Bradford, especially on that deep ball to Diggs, he just could not drive on that front leg. And as a result of that, it ends up like a javelin thrower. So what you see with a javelin thrower, they don't really step hard with that front foot. As a result, the javelin goes straight up in the air. And that's what you saw with Sam Bradford last night. He wasn't able to drive the ball, and it ended up like a javelin thrower where the ball was just going straight up in the air and just hanging. He can't control the nose of the ball or drive the ball. And even on the short throws, like the first throw, the digs that I alluded to earlier, he just could not place the ball where he wanted to go. And as a result, it just sailed on. And that's just because he couldn't drive the ball. And Yinka said it first, and I completely agree. That's the most helpless I've seen a quarterback in a game since RG3's 2012 ACL game. I believe it is 2012.
Well, hell, RG3 said it too. I don't know if you saw those tweets where RG3 hopped in and was like, oh, that looks real familiar to me.
Yeah, I didn't at the time. And even him reaching out and saying stuff like that is very disturbing, in my opinion. And the biggest thing I was upset about was they left him out there for so long, and he just looked so hopeless.
Hey, Yinka, I guess what were your thoughts on it? I know that you had very strong feelings about Sam not playing and that he should let himself, you know, take the time he needed to get healthy. I guess what were your thoughts quickly on kind of that whole sequence of events and Sam being out there, what looks to be earlier than he should have been?
Yeah, I mean, I know that we talked in our group message, but I think I was pretty adamant. I'm like, I don't feel like Sam Bradford's ready. Now, you know, I'm not a medical professional by any means, you know, for those who said like you're not a medical expertise, I understand that, but just given the fact that it was very clear that Sam, you know, had a non-contact injury, obviously this was a type of thing that you have to be really careful with, and you know, Dr. Cho had told us before, like, hey, you know, it's probably unlikely that Sam Bradford plays this week or should play this week. And you know, I was really trying to play into that, like, you know, maybe Sam would be better if he came back around, you know, the Green Bay game or, you know, the Ravens game or whatnot. But, you know, in the videos that I saw, like JR had said, he looked gimpy. He looked like he wasn't stepping into his, you know, his lead foot at all. And that became very, very apparent as I rewatched the game. You know, you really kind of see him. It looks like he's about to plant that leg, but he kind of settles back that weight back on his, back on his dominant foot, you know, as JR had gave us a great explanation, and that, you know, you saw it with the throws as well too. Now, I don't blame Sam Bradford because he's a competitor. I do blame Zimmer. I do blame, you know, I can't say if it necessarily was Rick's decision or he was encouraging it at all, but, you know, Sam might have said, yeah, I want to play. But I think Zimmer, you know, should have had the, you know, should have the deference to just say, no, I honestly don't think that you're ready, you know. And thank God we were facing the Bears team where, you know, it didn't really matter that Keenum didn't get the, you know, all the first team reps and stuff. So I was disappointed in Zim for not pulling him. I think there is a little bit, and I tweeted it out yesterday, I don't think Zim or Rick are going to get fired. I don't want them to get fired, but I do feel like they are in a little bit of a, you know, maybe they've gotten a warning or so, like, hey, we need to produce this year. And I think that might be driving some of the decisions that they make going into this year, whereas it's a little bit different for, you know, maybe a coaching staff or an organization to make decisions based off what they think is best. And I just didn't feel like this was the best decision.
Yep. I definitely feel you on that one. Not to jump too far down the conspiracy theorist wagon, but I mean, the trade that they made for Sam Bradford last year, I mean, that was a high risk move, right? And part of the reason that that move was risky wasn't just because of Sam's, you know, on-field play or the, you know, how difficult it is to make it to the playoffs or have a deep run in the playoffs or people to really think of that trade as a runaway success. But it also came because, you know, Sam did have some of these injury concerns when they did make the deal for him. So, I mean, I could see what where you're coming from with that, Prince, with, you know, Rick and whomever else was involved in signing off on that happening and making that move, feeling a bit of pressure now because you made that risky move and now you got to go, you know, talk to your boss about the fact that maybe that move is blowing up in your face a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I could see there being some undue pressure on Sam, but it was just sad. I mean, that was really the only word I could use for watching that first half and seeing him out there. It was sad. And Austin wrote a really great piece. I'll probably link to that in the show notes just because I think he did such a great job with it. Yeah, really breaking down just how awful it was to watch that man's what seemed to be spirits crumble on, you know, national television, realizing that his body was just, you know, breaking down on him. Yeah, so Yeah, I'm upset with the team for putting him in, not necessarily putting him in that situation, because if he wanted to play and he was quote-unquote cleared medically and they thought it wouldn't do any further damage, sure. But it became apparent pretty quickly that he had no business out there and they should have pulled him way quicker than they did. So
we're going to move along. Just last point on that. And that's what that kind of speaks to some of the criticism I have with Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer, very old school. He loves the, you know, play through injuries, make sure like you're the toughest guy. And, you know, his style shows in the way that he wanted the offense. Remember, we were running, you know, the old school Adrian Peterson, run up the gut, you know, just overpower, outstrengthen, you know, just be tougher than the guy in front of you. And that, I think that's leading to poor decisions, like, you know, continuing to play a guy who clearly can't, you know, can't protect himself. There was that last sack that he took. He just waved the white flag. It was very clear. Like, I'm just going to, I can't do this right now. And you saw that expression on his face. You saw Shermer kind of tap his leg and just like it'll be okay, but it just wasn't going to be okay for Bradford. I personally felt bad for Sam because I do think he's a good player, though I have criticism of him. But you know, I didn't like seeing him have to go through that. So that's why I had a high amount of criticism for Zimmer for allowing that to continue to happen.
All right, rapid reaction, Prince. Will go with you first since your mic's already hot. Sam's future. 30 seconds are left. What is Sam's future with the Minnesota Vikings?
My guess is after this, I mean, I said it earlier this week, I think he's going to IR. I don't want to say he's done. Actually, I probably will say he's done. I think he's going to IR. I just don't see him with his comments earlier this week. I don't see him being healthy for the rest of this season.
Okay, JR, how about you, man? Rapid reaction. What are your thoughts on Sam's future with the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah, after Sugarman coming out and saying he has wear and tear on that knee, I just don't see how he can come back this year. I think he goes to IR, but they'll probably leave it open to designate it to return. And I mean, they'll take it from there, but I just don't see him coming back and being healthy this year.
All right. Well, that's a bit of a downer, a bit of a bummer, but I mean, we did get some good news, some bright spots. Towards the end of the first half, you know, Case Keenum came in and then, you know, through the second half and was able to lead the Vikings offense, add some energy, bring things up to where at least we looked like, you know, a competent, you know, NFL offense, and ultimately was able to help us get the win. So, you know, before I turn it over to you guys, because I was just kind of, I don't even know why I was inspired to go look at this stuff, but currently, Case Keenum is 10th in the league in passer rating, 9th in PFF grading, 6th overall in adjusted net yards per attempt, 5th in QBR, and 4th in total adjusted yards per play. So, I mean, Case is a journeyman. He is very up and down. You're just as likely to get, you know, an elite-level game from him as you are to get a just absolute awful game. But, I mean, in the small sample that we've had so far, Case Keenum hasn't been terrible. He's actually been pretty good if you're judging by the numbers. So JR, I'll go to you first, because obviously I know that numbers don't always show all the context and tape can sometimes show you something a little different. So what are your thoughts of how Case has played so far this season and how far the Vikings can go with him if he maintains his current level of play?
I think he's definitely having an outlier season. I don't want to say similar to what Sam Bradford had last year, because I thought Sam played really well last season considering the circumstances. But what we're seeing with Case Keenum is he's very confident. And, you know, he was in a dumpster fire of a situation last year with the Rams and Jeff Fisher. And it was just the organization that was in flux. Everyone knew Jeff Fisher was eventually going to be let go. But now you're seeing a guy that's overly confident. He's getting more comfortable in Sherman's playbook as the weeks go along. And now you're seeing a situation where the team is starting to believe in himself. And it's not just himself that's starting to get confident. It's a team that's starting to believe in him and get behind him. So if they're not seeing Case, it's just this backup who is competing with Taylor Heinicke coming into training camp. Now they're starting to believe in this guy and believe they can win games with Case Keenum. Do I think they can win a Super Bowl with Case Keenum? No, I don't. Do I think they can get to a wild card playoff game and be in position to win it with Case Keenum? I think they do. I think they can, because he's a guy that's not going to turn the ball over a lot. He's going to make just enough throws to keep you in the game. Is he going to win a game for you or, you know, drive you down the field for a last-second field goal? He's shown to be able to do that. Can he consistently do that? I don't know. But we all know Mike Zimmer's blueprint is to play tough defense, all right, and run the ball and have a quarterback that can make just enough throws to keep you in the game.
And I don't want to be disrespectful or come off the wrong way, but a lot of what you just said when you were describing Case Keenum and kind of what we need out of him for us to be, you know, successful as a team, that sounds a lot like what most people would have said about Sam Bradford coming into this season, is that he's not going to win it for you. You're not going to win because of him, but you can win with him as long as you rely on that great defense. I mean, with the way that Case Keenum is playing right now, and again, physical talent is something different. Sam is far and away a more talented, has more physical gifts, is a more talented player than Case Keenum. But how wide do you see that gap in terms of output that we're getting from Case being versus what you would expect that we'd be getting from a Sam Bradford at this point in the season?
I don't think it's a big gap, honestly. Obviously, Case cannot make the same throws or type of throws that Bradford can make, but Case is extremely smart, and he understands his deficiencies. That's the one thing I do love about Case Keenum. He's not a guy that's going to force some head-scratching throws. He's a guy that's going to take what the defense gives him, and, you know, he's going to matriculate the ball down the field. Not, you know, a lot of explosive plays like we saw against Tampa Bay. That was a true outlier game. You probably won't see those type of games out of Case Keenum, you know, a lot. But he's a guy that's not going to turn the ball over, and he's going to put you in situations for you to win the game, whether it's by a touchdown or by a field goal. He's not a guy that's going to completely throw away the game, just making boneheaded mistakes. And that's a typical Mike Zimmer type of quarterback that he likes. So, like I said earlier, I think they can get to a wild card game with Case Keenum, and it wouldn't surprise me for them to be in position to win the game, but I think that's their ceiling with Case Keenum.
And Saxy Prince, man, how about you? What are your thoughts on the outlook for us going the rest of the way with Case Keenum?
Yeah, I was actually talking to a friend about this. When it comes to Case Keenum, if he continues to play like he does, I think even though he has great output right now, I think after the bye week, we are going to start seeing some defenses that aren't some of the bottom of the league when it comes to, pass defenses and whatnot. So I think Case can have a very much similar output as we did, you know, that stretch in 2015 when the Vikings won, I think it was six games in a row, and we were like 8-2 at a point. I think Case can give us that kind of production right now. You know, by the time we get to the bye, if we are, 6-3, 7-3 or something like that, I think Case can do that for us. Now, after that, I think that's when we're going to start to see, teams will have more film on Case and know how to rattle him a little bit better, which is why I think that long-term for the rest, long-term as far as this season, I don't think Case should be under center for very much longer. But as far as if we need a guy to take us to the bye, I think Case can definitely do it.
All right. Well, you said something a little interesting there, where it's obvious that you're alluding to something that has been going wild through a certain segment of folks on the VikingsTwitter.com, saying that you don't think Case should necessarily be the guy for the long term. Maybe Case can be the guy to the bye. And the sentiments that you're echoing there, they've certainly they've been something that's been getting some people pretty riled up, pretty worked up on the old Twitter machine there. And so let me get your thoughts on all this. I mean, I know that, you know, we think it's a nice story for all of us right now that, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is just gonna kind of miraculously ride in on his white horse and save the season and take us to the promised land. But I mean, is that really realistic? It's been a while since Teddy's been on the field, since he's played, you know, in live action. And I mean, his injury isn't just, you know, your run-of-the-mill ACL, meniscus, MCL type of thing. I mean, they were talking about amputation with that man's leg for a little while there. So, I mean, I know a lot of us want Teddy Bridgewater to come back. I'm in the camp that, you know, I'd kind of like to see Teddy Bridgewater, you know, come back next season. You obviously feel differently about that one. But is it realistic, or maybe I use a different word. Is it even fair for us to expect Teddy Bridgewater coming back from this injury with this kind of a layoff to come in and come in with the expectations that he's going to be the savior of our season?
No, absolutely not. And I actually wrote an article probably about a month ago that basically said that very thing. I don't think it's fair. I know the expectations for Vikings Twitter and maybe even a little bit of internally wanting Teddy to come out, you know, riding that horse and save the season and, you know, lead us to Super Bowl and win in Minnesota. I just don't think it's fair. I don't think it's for a guy who's been out of football for a year and a half. I don't think it's realistic expectation. Now, my mentality as far as this is I want Teddy to play for a very different reason. If they foresee Teddy being any kind of part of their plan for the future, I think you need to see him for at least six games. I think you need to see what kind of body work he can produce. I don't want to see him necessarily when, you know, we don't really have a shot anymore, all that stuff. I want to see him when, you know, stuff is still on the line. Can Teddy still be that clutch guy that he showed us to be in 2015? Does he still have some of the intangibles he had pre-injury? That's mostly why I want to see him on the field, because if you're telling me, you know, we have no QBs on, you know, besides Kyle Slaughter in contract for next year, you know, I'm not giving Teddy anything significant to come back and play for my team. Now, another team might, but, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable if I don't at least see him for six games. I put him at about week 10, so that gives him, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to have full practice, get into the swing of things, get some more first-team reps. But if Case is playing well, you know, that makes it a little bit harder. However, as an organization, knowing that you've put a little bit more capital into Teddy, I think it makes sense why, you know, you would kind of try to get him back. It's kind of the same thing as why the team might put forth Treadwell versus Floyd. Floyd might be playing better.
Who?
Stop. Who? Floyd might be playing better, but, you know, there is a little bit of, we've invested into this guy. So
I was riding with you right there, but I am of the mind that the Treadwell's time is, it's a wrap.
No, I completely agree with that. I'm just saying that's what I feel like the mentality might be for Zimmer and Rick and Co. and stuff.
Yeah, I feel you on that. And ultimately, yeah. I mean, we both, you know, and we've talked offline as well about, you know, the pressure of this season and obviously, you know, the expectations for the team coming in, you know, upgraded weapons, thoughts that we might have a, you know, top 10 offense to go along with the potentially elite defense that Mike Zimmer is rolling out there week after week. And then obviously, you know, we got the Sam thing going down, and then you have Case come in versus Pittsburgh, and it was like, oh my goodness, like this season's gonna be terrible, everyone's gonna get fired. But you've seen now as Case has started to get a little bit more comfortable, and it lends a little bit of credence to something that that Eric Eager says, Eric from PFF, when he was talking about which positions are most important on your football team, he said wide receiver is one of the most important positions. And I was, you know, I pushed back on that a little bit because you don't often see top 10 wide receivers actually make the playoffs ever on the teams that drafted them. And so the argument that was made there is that because of the impact that great receivers can have on a quarterback and because of how important quarterback efficiency is to teams winning, wide receivers can have that effect. It's, you know, your AJ Green and Andy Dalton type effect, and they can help you be a better team. And I feel like we're seeing a little bit of that now with, you know, Diggs, Thielen, and potentially now Floyd coming back in the mix.
For sure.
The Case doesn't have to do a lot. And there are a lot of times where his throws don't even have to be that accurate. And they're going out there and making plays and moving the offense down, because he is at least willing to take those chances. So
yeah,
I don't know.
And the funny thing is some of my film study from Case over the last few weeks is some of his throws aren't there. Like, he's had some very accurate passes, but some of the things that you're seeing to Thielen's having to make some circus catches that you're just like, well, you know, Case probably shouldn't have thrown that, or at least he should have been a little bit more accurate. But, you know, you have good wide receivers doing much. That's why I'm, you know, for two reasons why I'm more of an advocate of getting Teddy in there, because you do still need to answer the question, what are we going to do at the future at this position for, you know, not just this year, but next year and the year after that, as well as, you know, with Dalvin being out now, you might need a little bit more from the quarterback position. You might need a little bit more explosive plays. You might need more, you know, clutch plays if we are down, because we haven't really been able to show that we can play from behind. So yeah, that's partially why I'm advocate of seeing, not rushing Teddy back, but getting him back when he really looks like, hey, this guy could, you know, play and play very well.
Yeah. And I guess for me, it's just a matter of how Case Keenum looks and, you know, how he continues to play as we get into to some of the tougher pass defenses. So, I mean, we're playing the Packers. They're, you know, about a middle of the road, you know, passing efficiency defense per, you know, sharpfootballstats.com. Play the Ravens, who look to be a decent pass defense. The Browns, who have been awful. The Redskins, who have been good season to date, but then, you know, they've had, you know, some issues there after the bye. You know, the Rams have been giving up points. I mean, Detroit, I feel like we should have won that game the first time. I mean, the Falcons pass defense hasn't been great. I mean, there's some teams here where, I mean,
we can go on that run.
It's possible that Case continues to play at a high level. And if he continues to play well, let's say he plays a game against, you know, Green Bay and Baltimore, and he's playing well in both those. And then we go and we play the Browns and we do what we would expect we're supposed to do against the Browns in London. I don't know. I just have a hard time at that point putting the guy who hasn't played, you know, professional football in over a year and is coming back from one of the most horrific, you know, injuries that we can really think of in recent history at the quarterback position, and throwing him in there against, you know, Washington or Aaron Donald and the Rams. Like,
but the problem with that is, and I don't disagree with you. The problem that is when Teddy comes off PUP, you know, week six, or, you know, basically next week, Monday, they're going to have that 3 week window to kind of give him like this, you know, tryout to see how he is and stuff. So they either have to make the decision to, you know, activate him, you know, and probably release Kyle Slaughter or, you know, somebody else or whatever. Or, you know, I'm also assuming Bradford's going to go to IR. That, you know, Teddy is going to be activated and he's at least going to be the backup quarterback, which really takes away our ability to toll his contract.
The ship has sailed for me in terms of the contract tolling. And I'm not opposed, even though I would prefer, like, and we talked about it from the beginning of the season, circumstances being what they were, my thought process was that there was very little upside for Teddy, and that was kind of thinking about things with, you know, Sam being healthy throughout the season, or Sam being unhealthy and the season kind of going off the rails. I felt like there was limited kind of long-term upside for Teddy coming in and playing on, you know, trying to come in, be that savior, save the season, potentially rushing back, not being 100% healthy. At this point, you know, based on what the little bit you see from him on social media and what, you know, Sugarman said today, and the fact that they do expect him to get cleared, I'm not opposed to him playing. And so I don't want you to think that's where I'm coming from. If things go off the rails with Case, and Case has, you know, a few of those, because a high variance quarterback, you can get those great games, but you can also get a couple of those really bad games in a row too. So, I mean, if Case ends up going on a run where he's not doing what he's supposed to do, and we start to get those bad games, and the Teddy chance rightfully start, you know, at US Bank Stadium. All right. You know, if he's healthy and he's actually healthy, get him out there, let him play. But my perspective is, if as long as Case is playing well, it should continue to be Case's job. If he's playing well and we're winning games.
Yeah, no, and I don't want to make you think that I was that's not what you're talking about. But what I'm saying is, look about this way. Let's say, you know, Case is playing just okay, or maybe he starts, you know, kind of going off the rails a little bit. You know, with the margin of error that we have with Teddy Bridgewater, or just with the Vikings, you know, with the margin of error being so small, I'm thinking, well, if you are going to get this guy back in, if Case goes off the rails, you can only afford to maybe drop two games over that time. Because I think as we start losing more, it becomes way more unrealistic to go to Teddy and be like, Teddy, please save us. That's where I feel like maybe you need to get this guy closer to start sooner sooner, as far as like, maybe Case only drops two games and you're like, you know what, we need a quarterback change, versus letting Case potentially drop, you know, three, potentially four. And then you're like, okay, Teddy, go ahead and try to, you know, either win us the division or at least get us a wild card spot. That's why I feel like it's unfair to Teddy, and that's why I'm more of the advocate of, you know, if Case starts to play even, you know, maybe it unfairly, even average, that's where you maybe start looking at Teddy and see if he can, you know, maybe step in. But yeah, if Case plays well, I mean, I don't see any real reason to change, despite I think it's best for Vikings to not only win, but also get an answer of, you know, what do we have at quarterback position in the future? Because I think we all agree, we really don't feel that Case can win us a Super Bowl, which means that you are going to need more from that position, which could be Teddy. It could not be very well. But like, you need to have multiple questions answered in, and you only have, you know, you only have 11 more games to play. And yeah, I just think that the Vikings have a lot of unanswered questions and they need to do it in a short period of time.
And again, I guess I don't feel so bad on it because I tweeted this out initially in September. So it's not like it's one of those things that I'm kicking dirt on Sam Bradford's grave or something, or kicking him while he's down. But in terms of, I mean, if Case continues to play well, and you had to ask me which of the two quarterbacks I think would be more likely for us to win a Super Bowl with, I would probably say Case Keenum. And it was one of those things that I, again, because I can't help myself and I go look up career numbers. I mean, Joe Flacco is not a good quarterback. I mean, I think that that's something that's been firmly established. Joe Flacco is not good. Even the year that he got paid, he was not good that season.
He's not good.
But Joe Flacco was a high variance guy. And so what happened was Joe Flacco, because he was a high variance guy and he was willing to take shots down the field, he had a few hot games in a row. He basically had four hot games where he played really, really well. And because he played really, really well in those four games, his team won a Super Bowl and he got paid.
Yeah, right? That's really all you need. All you need sometimes.
In my mind, when I look at it, when you look at a guy like Case Keenum, who, you know, he's already had four games out of the, well, when I looked at this in September, four games out of 28. So 14% of his starts where he had a passer rating over 120 versus Sam Bradford, who had five games with a passer rating of over 120 out of 79. So, I mean, with Case Keenum, you're more than double as likely to have one of those awesome games that can help propel you to great things because of those YOLO balls that you love so much out of him. So
yeah, man.
While I feel like Sam would probably be the better quarterback to get us to the playoffs just because of the way he plays and he's not going to lose you games. I mean, if I had to, I guess, place bets on which one was going to be able to get hot enough to have that Flacco-like run, I think that, you know, Case's just YOLO attitude when he drops back there would be the thing that would make him more likely, in my opinion, to potentially be that one who could take us on that run because he just, you know, is nuts with it. Which, again, is not saying he's a good quarterback, just thinking that his style of play lends itself to having more, you know, high-end outcome type games because he just, you know, doesn't care sometimes and goes for it.
So then I guess I would ask you, how many games do you feel you know, if Case had to drop a few, how many games do you really feel before you start to entertain those Teddy chants?
Well, I mean, it's not even, I mean, you know me, it's not about how many games he wins or loses because I don't really love the QB. You know, I don't love the QB wins.
Yeah,
thing.
Just how well does he have to play?
It's really on that continuum. It's with the weapons that we have now and the fact that, you know, hopefully with our defense, we're not asking Case to go out there and drop 30 on the opponents every game. I mean, my expectations for him, I guess, are a little less. I'm looking for him to go out there and play, you know, around his career averages, maybe a little bit more, and not lose us games and hopefully get us enough points to get us into that, you know, 20-21 point sweet spot where, you know, the Vikings are pretty good with Mike Zimmer. So yeah, for Case, it's I'm grading on a curve for him a little bit. My expectations would be higher if we're talking about a Teddy Bridgewater or a Sam Bradford or something like that, talking about the regular season. But really for him, it's, you know, don't go have those blow-up games. Like, don't go out there and have those games with the passer ratings dropping into the 50s and stuff. Go out there and you know, function in the offense, make those safe throws that you're making, rolling out and getting the ball in the hands of the playmakers and let them go do their thing. So I guess for me, it would really be you know, if we're getting to a point where we're seeing, you know, really two or three of those kind of clunker type games that are very possible with a guy like Case Keenum too, I'm probably going and looking to pull the plug there. And then at that point, I mean, you probably lost all those games. So, I mean, depending on where you're at with the season, then maybe you're taking a look at Teddy. Maybe you're taking a look at Kyle. What is it? Slaughter.
Yeah, it might be Slaughter.
Yeah, he pronounces it differently, I think, based on one of the guides I saw. But yeah, at that point, then you're looking at, you know, one of the other quarterbacks in the roster to see what they can do for you. Because I like you, just based on, you know, my layman's psychological profile, looking at, you know, the body language and everything else going on with Sam, I don't see him coming back. Just the way, like, he looked broken when he was out there, and I feel like we've seen the last of him that we're going to see in purple, and it's either Case, Slaughter, or Teddy. They're going to be the ones that kind of determine how far we go this season.
I just don't give any – I guess I'm not giving any kind of credence at all to Slaughter being a guy. So it's either Case or Teddy. And I think that also may exist for moving forward. I just don't think with everything that the Vikings have had to deal with Bradford, you know, they probably aren't looking to, you know, sign an extension with him. The only thing that I worry about with Teddy is, you know, you like, let's say you sign him to, you know, like a 1 year deal. He plays well. You sign him to like a 4 year deal. You know, by the time Teddy becomes 30, I'm worried about these issues starting to pop up again. You know, maybe his knee starts to not feel the greatest anymore. He loses a little bit more of his mobility.
Lucky for us though, Prince, by then you will have been able to sneak your way into Winter Park. You'll have taken the draft commandments to Rick. They'll be drafting a young quarterback in the first four rounds every year, and we'll have that built-in insurance policy, and it won't be a problem.
Yeah, there's definitely that aspect of it.
Well, we've gone up to about the time that we said we were going to tonight. Unfortunately, Miles couldn't be here with us taking care of Teddy. JR had to drop halfway through there, going and take care of Mrs. QB1 and some business they had to deal with at the house there. So, Saxy Prince, before we get out of here, anything we should be looking out for you, any work that you have coming for Daily Norseman or any of the other sites that you might write for that we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, I think I'm going to give a, you know, quarter one assessment of how the Vikings have done so far, you know, some of the good things, some of the bad things. How I, you know, maybe drop another one with how I think quarter two could go. I'm going to keep updating, you know, just like news that I get for, you know, the Climbing Pocket site. And yeah, nothing too big. I usually wait till the, you know, midway of the season to really break down specific positions that I have noticed have just been excelling. I probably, if Anthony Barr keeps playing as well as he has been, I might look at something into him, because I'm actually really impressed with what I've seen so far. So, yeah.
That is awesome, man. Glad to be back with y'all. It's unfortunate we couldn't have the whole crew, but we'll get everyone together here before the Green Bay game to preview how that one goes down. So, at this point, you know, my name is Jason Brown. Find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Here with the man Yank Allende. You can find him on Twitter at SaxyPrince. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, and we will be back soon.